You're listening to a 9to5.cc podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to Go Plug Yourself. We've been talking to awesome people in Montreal since 2011. Just a friendly reminder that if you're going to be buying anything on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Zazzle.com, go to 9to5.cc first and click the links at the bottom or in the sidebar so that we get a bit of that money. Also follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and enjoy the show.
Go plug yourself. You plug and mother plugger. Go plug yourself.
Now we're going. Keith has done another classic. Let's get Walter to do a fake start on the old podcast, and we're recording. We actually are recording now.
Stop with the fake voice.
Okay, I'll tell you. Hey, I don't see now. I'm going to try to go out of my way to do like a stupid fake voice. That's going to be maybe an
another
accent,
one.
Maybe an accent or something. Another stupid voice. Okay, the person who's berating me today is none other than Kane
Robert Hull. England.
Yeah, Robert England. Was affecting an amazingly deep voice today. I usually thought he had sort of that British American thing going on, but no. Today he's sounding an awful lot like Kane Hodder.
Hey, hello, guys.
Hey, Kane.
Well, not everybody gets to hear what Kane Hodder sounds like.
Is that close? Or how are we? Is
yeah,
that
we're
distance?
Okay.
Oh, we're good.
Okay, great.
We're
yeah. You don't see the levels,
I can
Kane.
See it.
You can't see it. No, you cannot.
Yeah, he's right there. It's fine. I was going to say though, not a lot of people get to hear what Kane Hodder sounds like. You usually.
Yeah,
play
well,
a silent killer, usually.
Hatchet for you.
No, not silent, actually. Not on the set. Never silent.
You're very vocal.
But in post-production, they often take out that sound so that it doesn't sound like me when I'm killing somebody.
Very true. What are you actually doing then? Like, are you talking about grunts, screams?
Yeah,
like
I always make all kinds of noise, and most often they don't use it.
Really?
It's like they're saying, ooh, that's too scary.
Have you ever seen cuts out there of the movies where like before they've taken that out or?
No, not really. A couple times I saw dailies, but I prefer not to look at dailies or playback now. Dailies kind of doesn't exist anymore, but playback. I think it's a mistake for an actor to watch playback of a scene they just did very often.
Yeah,
because sometimes it makes you make a change to what you just did. And the change is not as effective as the original version. You
okay.
think it is at the time, and then, you know, you second-guess yourself. And so I don't really look at playback.
Hmm. Kane Hodder is in town this week. Is it weird me referring to you but like in by the
your full
person,
name?
We're
just
keep
calling
like
you Kane Hodder.
A lot. I'll probably kill you at the end of this,
Kane's
but that's
here,
fine.
In Montreal, how long have you been in town for?
2 days.
Great. And he's here for the premiere, the Canadian premiere, the
yes.
Canadian premiere of Hatchet 3 series, which you've been in since Hatchet 1.
Yes.
Victor Crowley.
And now some people are saying maybe the end of the trilogy.
Could be, yes. It seems to be.
It would certainly be the end of the trilogy, as if there was another one. It wouldn't be a trilogy anymore. So
yes.
this is the end of the trilogy,
whether there's another one or not.
Yes.
Very good.
So that's how that works. That's how trilogies work. We've established that.
Regardless.
Would you be up for a fourth?
I would.
Yeah.
I love the character. I'm not sure how Adam could continue it from this, because it's fairly definitive ending, but
is it?
Well,
right.
Well, you've seen it or you haven't?
No,
yet?
We haven't watched it.
I have not.
Oh, not seen the third.
Are you
going to
see it?
So these are actual questions.
Are you going to see it tonight?
Possibly.
Are you going to be at Kama Sutra?
Well, I mean, we were discussing before.
We're going to see when our reservations at Kama Sutra are,
yeah.
And we'll see how that goes.
If you're the owner of Kama Sutra, send me an email.
I was going to say, though, I mean, like, there's no real definitive endings in horror movies, right? Like, they blew Jason bits to bits, and then...
They blew him?
Blew him, and it was great.
God.
They blew
that was
him
before
bits.
You got involved in the series.
I don't think I was in that one.
They brought you up to bring it back down to
eight,
a PG-13.
It was 8 when they...
We got to get Hodder in here. We got to get this back down to like, a family-friendly rating on the,
yes.
on the Friday
well,
the 13th
you know,
series.
I know. There's always a way to bring somebody back, but he really did pretty much try to... bring finality to all the characters.
Oh, okay. So
there's
like,
only one survivor in Hatchet 3.
Okay. I don't want to spoil it.
No.
I want to ask really quick before we forget. We were looking at your film credits, and I saw that, and I've seen this, and it's kind of, I don't really understand this. You were in Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 3.
Yes.
But only serving for the as Leatherface, but only for the Leatherface stunt scenes.
Correct. Now, here's the stunt coordinator.
Okay, you were the stunt coordinator as well. Okay. But you were in the Leatherface suit for that. Now, why couldn't you have been Leatherface like for the non-stunt parts as well?
I could have.
Right.
I mean, but R.A. was cast as that character before I was hired as stunt coordinator.
Right.
And the only reason I did the scenes that I did as Leatherface was that there was an insurance issue. Whenever there was a live chainsaw with a chain on it, that they had to have a stunt person wielding that. So it wasn't that R.A. was incapable of doing it. It was just an insurance thing saying, you know, if you're going to do this near actors with a real chain on a live chainsaw, it has to be a stunt person just to cover our asses. So
makes sense.
I did those scenes. And even so, R.A. still did a couple scenes with the live chainsaw. But mostly in the fight in the water where it's more unpredictable and stuff.
I was going to say, it'd be a little hard for insurance to sort of figure that out under the mask and everything, who's like, wait, that looks like another guy.
Exactly. and just reminding me of something. This is interesting, too, that I was replaced, as you know, as Jason against my will for Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah, that was well documented. Yes. And there was
I thought I was doing it. I was given a script at a lunch meeting by a New Line executive saying, we're doing this movie. Freddy versus Jason. I was very happy. I took the script home, was very excited, and then they hired a director, and things changed.
I was at the premiere in Montreal, and I don't remember the name of the other Jason, but his name got booed in the credits. It was hilarious. It was like opening night, whatever.
And he's Canadian.
And it was like it was like Robert Englund, big cheer, and then it was like the other name, and it was like boo, and I was like, oh
wow.
Like, there was, like, enough people who were there at the premiere who were, like, they wanted to see Kane Hodder.
This is Hodder Land.
Wow, yeah. That's good to know.
You're
even
in Hodder
against
land.
A Canadian.
Even against a Canadian.
Wow.
It was hilarious.
That's nice to hear, but unfortunate for him. But
yeah.
Ken Kurtzinger,
yes. There we go.
But I thought I was doing the movie. So, anyway, they replaced me, and here, this is probably too obscure for anybody to know for the question for tonight, but I ended up still being in Freddy versus Jason.
What?
And when is this, when are you going to use this?
This is probably going to come up in the next day or two.
Not tonight, though.
Not tonight.
There's a scene in the hospital somewhere. I forget what the context of the scene was, and there's a TV that's playing a movie. And since it was New Line that did Freddy versus Jason, on the TV, it had to be another New Line movie, so they didn't have to pay rights for it.
Makes sense.
They're screening Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 on the TV, and the scene that is being viewed is me as Leatherface.
That's hilarious.
In Freddy versus Jason on the screen.
So you're like, I made it in there anyway.
And I'll bet you R.A. got a residual for that, or got paid for that, because he played the character. And they didn't specify, well, that's actually the stunt double right there, but, you know.
Can we specify, and I feel this is, at this point, this is a stupid question. I apologize. Can we specify who R.A. is?
R.A. Mihailov played Leatherface in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. I've done.
Because you were just throwing around R.A. here.
Yeah, that's true.
For the benefit of our listeners, certainly not mine, because, but, yeah.
Yes. No, good. That's a good point. He played Leatherface. He was in a movie called Fallen Angels with me. I just finished a film 2 weeks ago in Louisiana with John Schneider, who wrote and directed it, Dukes of Hazzard fame. Mm. And R.A. is in that one, along with Don Shanks, who played Michael Myers in one of the Halloween movies, Bill Moseley, who we all know.
Bill's great.
And we all played ourselves, basically.
Right.
Other than Bill, but we played ourselves. So.
Why couldn't Bill play himself?
His character was kind of a Robert Englund type character.
Right.
So he didn't play himself. I was just me.
So. Correct me if I'm wrong. Viggo Mortensen, I believe. He's in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, right?
Yes, he is.
Did you guys just hang out a bunch?
Yeah. He actually came to my wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was, I had worked with him the previous year or 2 years before that on Prison, which was Rennie Harlan's first American film that he directed. Viggo was in that. I met him there. I was a stunt coordinator on that movie also, which is the reason I became Jason, was that movie. But so, and then working with Viggo again on Chainsaw 3 was fantastic. We became friends, and yeah.
When did you first become aware of the plans for Jason X, and what was your initial reaction? I mean initial.
Yeah. Obviously, when I heard we were doing another Jason movie, I was very happy because this would be my fourth in a row. And then I was told, yeah, it's Jason in space. And I'm like, oh, really? What's the real story? Jason in space. Okay, it was funny the first time, but what's the real story? Jason in space. I said, uh-oh. Yeah. But, you know.
I got to say, though, amongst the long-lasting franchises that have made it to space, I felt like that one dealt with the change in well, setting pretty well. Pretty
and for me, what I ultimately decided was that, yes, it's not my favorite location for Jason to be, maybe. Because it could be hokey, or maybe not, but yeah, it could be.
You're always in danger when you start to throw in space into a series.
But what I decided was, you know what, I'm just going to make Jason the same.
Right.
Regardless of the setting, make him the same as he's always been, so at least that part of it will be consistent.
Probably a good call, yeah.
I think that's what worked the best of it, is it was just sort of like, even though the surroundings changed, you're like, it was still Jason. Like,
yeah.
Like, it was absolutely, and Jason didn't care. He was like, there's people around, I'm going to kill him.
Right.
Like, so it's
maybe
like,
a little weird looking around, but that fucking girl's going to get her head ripped off. So.
Exactly, there you go.
Did that setting, though, pose new challenges for you in terms of stunt choreography, in terms of performing these stunts, because I think there was a couple of there's like some zero G sequences and stuff, as I recall.
Yeah.
Was that a new experience for you? Was that like a new wrench in the system for you? Or?
Well, it was at the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
We did a lot of wire work on Hatchet 3, mm-hmm. which you know to make Victor look more powerful. But in Jason X, when I first read the scene about Brodsky and Jason having a fight in weightlessness, I was like, oh, man, that, out of the entire movie, this is what concerns me the most. if you want to make Jason look dopey,
yeah,
have him floating around throwing punches. And I really sat down with Jim Isaac, unfortunately, who has passed away, but he and I had a big discussion. I said, I really worry about this, Jim, about no matter how you shoot this, Jason's going to look kind of goofy. And I think he realized that was the case, so the weightless thing is just the re-entering the atmosphere shot now.
Right.
So it's not as bad as it certainly could have been.
Yeah, because one of the things when you're watching like Jason and how he moves, you're like, he easily looks like he could be like 400 pounds. Like he looks even heavier than a normal guy. Like the
right.
weight of him is
right.
really important. So if you like take that away,
yeah.
you start to be like, wait a second, is he as powerful?
You suddenly make both characters even in
yeah.
their power, and I don't like that.
So, and it leads one to wonder, could the title have been Jason X, Jason versus Gravity?
No.
Wow.
Jason's.
Could have been, but
Jason's
been stupid.
One true enemy is gravity.
And I think the cherry on the sundae of Jason X is you also get to kill David Cronenberg.
Yes.
Yeah, which is real fun.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Not many people have done that.
No.
If anyone. Has anyone ever killed him besides me?
I don't know that he's been killed on screen. I think.
Nightbreed? Yes, right. I was going to say, I think he dies in Nightbreed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who killed him then?
I don't know. You know, it's funny.
Ken Kersinger?
Oh, great.
No.
We're working with the team who took the Valka of Nightbreed.
Okay.
What's that? Really?
Yeah, extra worth material. So that's coming out soon. So anyways, and of course that's Cronenberg is in that. He plays the crazy doctor who I think one of the monsters probably kills him at the end.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he makes it.
I wonder who it is.
Yeah. I don't think it's anybody super noteworthy, but I don't remember the doctor making it through Nightbreed.
If this is coming through, that is the voice of Andrew Hunt from Raven Banner Cinema. Thank you, Andrew.
Brother of Mike, yes, for being our
I've never heard that one before.
Fact checker.
Well, in that way, brother of Mike, have you heard?
Brother of Mike.
No?
No.
Can we get this Mike Hunt on the podcast maybe at some point?
We'd like to see Mike Hunt.
He might be a Kama Sutra a little later today.
Along with Hugh, what's his last name?
Morris.
Jass.
Yeah. Hugh Jass.
Yeah. Hugh Jass.
Mike Cox.
Yep. Hawks. Yep.
Amanda Cox. Hug and kiss.
Yeah, exactly.
So now we've gone to watch our language.
We've gone to no, absolutely not.
Fuck that then.
Exactly. All right.
It's the internet. You don't need to censor yourself on the internet.
How did you feel about the people who were cool with wearing the headsets again? By the way.
Huh?
I said, how? What were your thoughts? What were your feelings towards those who were cool wearing the headset for this podcast? By the way,
they're idiots.
All right, okay, idiots. Every single one of them. You heard it here first. So, I wanted to ask you because you know, when did you get into the whole stunt business? How did you get into that? Like,
that was my main focus.
Right.
To get into stunts. 1977.
Okay.
Yes, I'm old as shit. And
I was going to point that out, but I.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you were, because I'll make sure we take care of that later.
I feel like he could send you right through this table.
Probably.
Oh, I could strangle you with your own ratty-ass beard.
I'm going to – Andrew, I think Mike's going to show up. I'm going to go find
him. Has anyone ever seen his beard?
His beard?
Yeah.
All the time. He's,
There are things living in it, folks.
Yep. People – his girlfriend's into it, though. It's really weird.
I don't know.
His girlfriend.
She exists too. So how about that stuff?
Where is she, Walter? Why isn't she here?
So you're a virile young man, Kane, and we certainly all respect you to death. So getting into the stunt work in the late 70s, how does that compare to the industry now?
Well, I mean, it's a lot safer. The stunt industry is a lot safer now. Certainly not safe, but much more so than it was then, because that's when I got burned. Doing a fire stunt, because the techniques for doing a fire stunt were completely different then, and also I thought I knew more than I did, so I paid the price. Got burned up first year in stunts. Not a good way to start a career. Almost died from it, and then decided to go back into fire stunts.
Yeah, as most
brilliant
people
as
would
that
do.
Sound.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
So using the whole fool me once theory, I believe.
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I figured it's very unlikely I could get burned up twice.
Yeah, I mean, you've gotten it out of the way, really.
It's like getting struck
year.
By lightning twice, which people have done.
Yeah, they're called the lucky ones.
There's a guy I met recently that claims to have been struck by lightning four times. Does that sound believable?
I feel maybe you're asking for it. Like you head out to like in the middle of a lake in a like metal boat, just being like, wait,
trying to get that signal. You know,
like, exactly. Like going for the record.
That's what he said, though. But anyway,
yeah, exactly. That's it. Wide open areas with like a metal rod.
That's an unlucky motherfucker. If that's the case. Four times.
Jeez.
What were some of the earlier films you were involved with in this time? Like, did you talk about doing like fire stunt work? What were some of the projects you were involved in back then?
One of the first films that I did a lot of different stunts in was Lone Wolf McQuaid with Chuck Norris. It was, I think, in 1981. Because, you know, the stunt business is incredibly hard to break into if you don't know somebody. Or if you don't have a family member, even more importantly. So, because it's a safety issue. You know, it's not like acting. You can decide to become an actor, get an agent, and you could get lucky and get successful early. With stunts, there's no getting lucky, because nobody's going to hire you if they've never heard of you, because of the safety issue.
You know, like, people's lives hang in the balance.
Right.
So
you have, no matter what, unless, again, that you have a father or something that blazed the trail, you have to start at the bottom and slowly work your way up, gaining confidence from stunt coordinators. Well, I saw him do this, and it was decent, so maybe I'll give him a little bit better thing to do. Gradually work your way up. I starved literally for 8 years, the first 8 years in the business. So very hard to get into. Once you are established, though, it can be very lucrative and fun as hell. But it just takes a long time to get there. And that's all I intended to do. I never thought I was going to be an actor or known for anything. I just wanted to be a working stunt performer.
Right.
That was my dream. And that happened. And then I got lucky, and somebody like John Buechler put me in a position that changed my life. So,
Turned out you looked really good killing people.
Yeah. And it seemed to be quite effective, making it look realistic.
But you so your specialty, but you're saying your specialty was, or what you focused on for those first few years, was doing fire stunts.
One of the things.
One of the things.
I did a lot of car stuff. I did a lot of fights. You have to be fairly well-rounded in stunts to be to work enough.
And do people, like, teach you how to do these things? Or
yeah, I'm just asking because he really wants to get into fire stunts.
Yeah, I'll set you on fire.
I've set myself on fire, and I just it's not fun. So I
yes.
You play with fireworks all the time, Walter. So it's just the next step, lighting yourself on fire.
I did the same thing. So, yeah. You know, the early way of doing a fire stunt was so different that far more dangerous, and I didn't even use those techniques when I got burned because I couldn't afford them. Oof. So I went the really discount version, which worked several times. I thought, hey, this is great. It doesn't cost me much money to prepare for it, and it looks fantastic, so I'll just keep doing it that way.
Well, see, I'm not understanding this because you're talking about going the discount route yourself and not spending a lot of money yourself. Why is this on you even?
Well,
as a stunt performer, be doing all this prep work yourself. Shouldn't this be somebody else doing this? And then it's like, okay, everything's ready now. Yes. Now let's get the stunt guy.
Stunt coordinator too.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a very good point.
I keep forgetting that point. Yeah.
Because in my book, I explain all this because since I was brand new, I wasn't working on film when this happened. I was doing it to promote my career.
Right.
So, as you said, if you're on a film, there's going to be a stunt coordinator who is more experienced than yourself. He's going to be setting things up and then having you do them. Would have been much safer. But I was trying to get to the point that stunt coordinators would hire me. And by saying, hey, look how good I am, giving them footage of fire stunts and this and that, so that somebody will say, eh, I'll give him a shot. Like early guys did do that, even after I got burned. Early stunt coordinators were a guy named Gary Baxley, who used to hire me on Dukes of Hazzard. TV show, Frank Orsatti used to hire me on the Incredible Hulk TV show. So it did work, but it was just, you know, that's why I got burned, because I was using discount methods and it wasn't on a film. For many years, I told people it happened on the set because I was too embarrassed, quite literally, to tell someone I got burned because I was stupid.
Wow.
And when I wrote my book, I said, you know what? I'm going to tell everything really how it was.
And the name of your book, again, is?
Unmasked.
Unmasked.
Okay. And it tells my life story, basically.
When did you put that out?
A couple years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, it was not very long ago.
Yeah, almost. A couple years ago, something like that. And but, you know, very well received. People like the honesty. And because I talk about severe bullying that I went through when I was 10 and 11, and then the burn injury, and then all the fun stuff with the career, too. So just so many times I've read biographies from actors, and I'm reading it, and I said, you know, I already knew all this stuff. All they're talking about is their career. I wanted to learn some things about the person that I hadn't heard before. Well, you learned some shit about me, that's for sure. Good and bad.
I was going to say, like, we've seen a lot of your films and stuff. Not many of us were around in your childhood.
Right.
So it's more interesting as a fan to, like, read about that period.
And then when I tell people I was bullied really badly, and I'm not talking about teasing and taunting. Yeah. I'm talking about physically beaten up, that people are like, God, that's hard to believe.
And you're like, you're 6'4", and you're Jason, and you're Victor Crowley, and you murder people
that's
on screen.
That's how it goes.
Were you big as a kid, or did
no.
when did you become a big person?
When I started freshman year in high school, I guess your school is the same. You start, you have 4 years of high school, or
five. Yeah.
So you start
grade 7 to grade 12.
Yeah. But a freshman's grade 9 though.
When you're around 13 years old, you start high school.
Yeah,
right. So I was 5 feet tall.
Oof. Wow.
When I started high school.
Okay.
Jeez.
So and I was I was shy and kind of timid. And that doesn't go well.
Right.
That's a bad combination.
Small, shy, and timid, yeah.
Yeah. So people are going to fuck with you.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand up for myself for a long time, so.
See, my parents always told me, I'm like 5'8", 5'9", now. But I was a pretty small kid. My parents, the parents were always telling me, it's like, don't worry. you'll hit the growth spurt. You'll hit the growth spurt. And I was like, you know, when I was like about, maybe when I was about like 16, 17, I was like, I finally called, you know, full on bullshit on that. I'm like, it's not happening. I don't know who this happens to.
That's from your 5'7" dad and your 5'1" mom.
Right. You know,
and you'll hit it.
Yeah. And so, but I think you're proof to the fact that this does happen for some people.
It does. Yeah. I definitely grew late.
Was it a summer? One of those deals where you came back from the summer at one point?
No, not really. There was no really incredible stretch of, you know, a few months, but it just, you know, gradually
slow and steady all the way through high school. It just like gang gets bigger every year.
Where'd you grow up? Sorry,
in the Marshall Islands.
Okay, where is
out that? In the South Pacific.
Okay,
all
right.
In,
I was gonna say why? Yeah. Why?
Yeah, really. It's a military base.
Okay,
but we were not military. No. So my dad was with the Corps of Engineers. So
okay.
We went out there, and that's where I went to all my high school. That's what stopped the bullying, because I moved out of the town. Hmm. And just before I moved, fortunately, I don't want to get off on a big bully rant, but it's a fucking insidious thing to do to somebody, because it follows you for the rest of your life.
Right.
Even when the bullying stops, it's not gone. So, and the worst thing about getting bullied severely, like I did, is that you hate yourself. You become in a frame of mind where you hate yourself because you do nothing to stop it. That's why people commit suicide. Not because they're afraid of getting bullied or beaten up or something. They fucking hate themselves so much that they just want it over. So that's what people don't understand. That's my opinion anyway. And just before I left to the islands, I finally had enough, and I don't even know how I did it, but I was able to punch a guy in the face who was doing shit to me.
Right.
And I had never been able to do anything until that point. And I just somehow snapped, punched him in the face, then got my ass beaten. But
but you got the punch in.
I went home with a beat-up face knowing that I tried. Huge difference in my psyche. Not my face. It was still beaten up. But,
sort of like, I gotta punch
but for my emotional well-being, I was like, well, you know what? I got beat up, but I fucking tried. And that was huge.
Makes all the difference.
Huge. And then I went out and started high school, and everything changed. So, but when I graduated high school, by the way,
right.
I weighed 140 pounds.
Okay.
You're like a big lanky kid, I guess?
And you're 140 when I graduated.
It's just a
and
lanky
I was tall
kid.
Then. So, yeah, I was, I would say even skinny,
yeah.
Very skinny.
Yeah, I bet.
140,
more Slender
I weigh
Man,
about,
less Jason.
Yeah.
I weigh about 100 pounds more now.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
I was going to say, I really wanted to ask this. If you have, like, on screen, you've killed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you have, like, a favorite kill at all? Like, if we're like,
oh,
what's
sure.
Kane Hodder's favorite kill?
The ripping of the woman's face apart on Hatchet 1.
Okay, yeah.
When I put my hands in her mouth and then
just,
pull her
yeah.
head apart by her jaw.
You're like, that's the one that's the
yeah.
highlight reel?
My favorite Jason kill is the sleeping bag.
Oh, that's...
Sleeping bag was
awesome. I like the frozen head in Jason X.
So Jason
I
X
like
is
punching the fucker's
moments.
Head off on part 8. There's a really good kill of Corey Snyder for... in the Hatchet 3, where I stuff his head into the ground. You've seen that or no?
Oh, I haven't no. seen 3 yet, so.
I've seen that one?
He plays Schneiderman because he's D. Snyder's kid.
Really?
Yeah, and there's a famous story that D. always tells that he was out somewhere during his heyday of Twisted Sister, and somebody recognized him and said, "Oh, my God, you're Dean Schneiderman from Quiet Riot." So he fucked up the entire thing. His whole name.
Dean
Schneider, Quiet Riot. So ever since then, D called himself Schneiderman.
Schneiderman, yeah.
And that's what his son's character is in Hatchet 3. And he's very good in the movie.
Oh.
He's very, very good. And his kill is pretty horrific.
So, I'm going to say?
I was going to say. Your first Jason movie was which one? It was the was it Manhattan?
7.
No.
First Blood.
New Blood.
And then
First Blood is Rambo.
Followed by Manhattan.
Yeah, I did
right?
7, 8, 9, and 10. Yeah.
Right. And Manhattan was correct me if I'm wrong, was that a Vancouver shot production?
Entirely.
Yeah.
Jason except for one day. Mostly on a boat.
Yeah. A lot of that is on a boat. I feel people who haven't seen
Jason
that movie.
Jason takes Manhattan on a boat.
He only gets to Manhattan in the last few minutes.
Right. But, and we did shoot one day in Times Square.
Just the one day. Just to get the shot. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And did those scenes. And in 36 and a half years I've been in this business now, and over, 100 and some movies, I don't know, that was the single most amazing day of shooting I've ever had, was in Times Square on a Friday night at 10 p.m. in full costume. People were going absolutely nuts because it was in the heyday of the Friday the 13th movies, and all of a sudden here's Jason. They're shooting a Jason movie in Times Square on Friday night. Hundreds of people had to be held back literally by police barricades on the streets, and I never took the mask off because I didn't want, to destroy the image of the character standing out on the traffic island. And all I had to do was between takes turn and look at people, and they fucking screaming and cheering. I felt like the biggest rock star ever.
If they were to shoot that nowadays, it'd be shot on a green screen with
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was going to say, though, it must have been, in terms of, press, that must have been, a press guy's dream to, shut down Times Square, put Jason right in the middle of it, and have, tourists and everybody being like, the new, and, you don't, the movie's not out yet, but you're like, Jason's going to be in New York.
Right.
Must have been a huge deal.
And there's, the middle traffic island in Times Square where they come up out of the subway. Platform, which doesn't exist.
Right? Yeah,
in the middle traffic island in the middle of Times Square, you're not going to come up out of stairs. So they built a framework that appeared to be stairs coming up, and the actors quite literally
got crouched. And
yes, here's the wall, and the camera's over there, and they have to come up. So they go.
They do the stairs game. Yeah,
they do the stairs game from behind the couch.
When you watch that scene, you can tell they're doing that now that you know it.
Go back and watch that.
Because
sure.
I've had people go there and say, hey, I went to see that subway platform and they got rid of it. I said, well, it was never there.
It's just never
it's like after Jason was done with it, it was just unusable at that point. Exactly.
And my dressing room was, I don't know what the building is called that is an angle right at the end of Times Square.
Yeah.
At the, I guess, southern end? I don't even know. There's a building shaped like this. This famous, it has the Jumbotron on it now, I think.
Yeah.
My dressing room was that corner space.
Nice.
On the second floor of that building.
That's really cool.
Wide open. It was unbelievable to look at Times Square and all panoramic view windows and stuff.
So, Hatch 3, we're just going to wrap up real quick. Hatch 3, we're having the obviously the premiere. Unfortunately, this episode's not going to be up, but it's getting released, and it's on video on demand, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
swing over to Andrew.
I don't have the exact street date on me, sorry, but
soon.
It's going to be coming out soon.
Yeah, it's going to be available super soon for everybody who can't make
August
it.
August 13th in the States, so I don't know what that means.
And what's coming up for you after that?
There's a couple films I might do, but the one that I just did with John Schneider is the one I'm most excited about, so it's a...
And are you working on, are you stunt coordinating for films where you're not, physically in? Or?
Not too much anymore.
No?
If I coordinate something, I'm usually playing a character also.
Do you ever get called in for, consultation work? Or?
Not really.
No.
Not really. It's more of a, it's kind of cost effective for them, too, to if I'm playing a major character, for me, especially on location, for me to be the stunt coordinator as well. They still have to pay two salaries. But they only have to pay for one person to be traveled and put up.
One plane ticket, one hotel, and
exactly,
per diem,
everything. So, it's cost effective for them. And if I'm playing a major character, then, I'm going to be involved in most of all the stunts anyway.
Right. Yeah. You want to make sure that they look good because it's you, doubly. Right. So it's like everything. It's a whole package deal.
Although in this movie Smothered, the John Schneider one, I didn't coordinate. I was the main character. As myself, but John asked me, please don't coordinate concentrate on the character, and I think it was the right choice.
Cool. I'd like to ask one more question, if that's okay. Is it one more, and then we'll...
You just did.
Okay. If that,
is that okay?
That wasn't directed at you either.
It's over.
I'd like to ask one more question directed at you, Kane. And that was, how hard...
9 inches.
Thank you.
Oh, that wasn't it?
Question
I
didn't even
ask.
I was
told that you would ask.
I was going to be my further leading question, but things got off to a rocky start. I just want to know, how hard was it ultimately to hold your breath that long in Jason Takes Manhattan being dragged by the ship?
See, I thought it was going to be an intelligent question.
I think it is. I think it's pretty.
I did have to hold my breath quite a bit in part 7, so I thought that's where you're going.
Part 7 is the one with the psychic girl?
Yeah.
Underwater. I really enjoyed that one. I feel that's the most underrated in the franchise.
Oh,
it's my
favorite one,
too. It's
great. But the beginning of the movie where I was chained to the bottom of the lake
right. It
was incredibly hard. It was the last 2 days of shooting, of course, when you're already exhausted, but... as far as holding breath from wherever that place was till the ship arrived in New York, not easy either.
Yeah. Crystal Lake to New York, just
and
not
talk
far.
About that fucking cold water too. That was Britannia Bay, in Vancouver.
That's just
in
straight up cold ocean
February.
Water.
went down to 8.5 inches that day. Am I right?
Am I right?
All right.
Am I right?
Anyway, thank you so much.
All right, thank you guys.
Really appreciate this.
Go trim that beard.
All right.
Those sweet, sweet piano tunes you're listening to right now come courtesy of Leland Beckman and Oral Turpitude. Oh man, that was some great podcasting, wasn't it? Anyhow, be sure as always to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, add us on iTunes, buy our stuff, and basically try as hard as you can to make us happy in every single way possible. Of course, be sure to check back every day on 9to5.cc for comics on Wednesdays, podcasts on Thursdays, Scott or Sophie's art on Fridays, and seriously, we'll try as hard as we can to get Zombies and Loathing, Fuck Mondays, and Templars back as soon as we can. Thanks for listening, everyone.
9to5.cc. We're not working. Why should you?